we present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with an advert spotted in the Paris Voice magazine, read by Carolyn Brown.
Our hotel's superior rooms are decorated in the traditional Louis Philippe style. The luxury comforts include flat-screen TV, workspace and free wife.
And our thanks to Andrew Rose for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Daniel Finkelstein. And opposite them on my left, Roisin Conaty and Andrew Maxwell. Jeremy, who's made a bad career move?
North Korea are getting a bit arsey. And the trouble with North Korea is it's such a comedy Stalinist country that you sort of like it. And it's actually a hateful dump. It's got the worst human rights. It's terrible, North Korea. It's like IKEA. It's full of slightly stunned people wandering around in a daze, imagining they had things. And it's like that, North Korea. And your man, your boy, son of Kim Jong-un, he wants some foreign aid. And rather than say, oh, please, go on, can I just have some money, he's posturing and saying, look, I've got this missile that could hit Vienna in as little as 45 years.
Can I just go... I'll just go through the names of the families just a bit so we're really clear. There's Kim Jong-un, who's the present one. There's Kim Jong-il, Kim Il-sung, and the controversial one, Kim Il-fix-it.
But there is some significance about the weekend, isn't there?
Yeah, well, Kim Il-sung's 101st birthday, and they think that some of the tests might be at the same time, but he's going to be 101. Now, here's the thing, what do you get a man who's been dead for 19 years?
Well, he's not dead, is he? He's the eternal leader.
Oh, really? Because I was going to go for the safe option and get him an ashtray, but... they've been full of propaganda, the North Korean papers, actually, about Kim Jong, as usual. And I have to say, it's when you realise you're in a good country. You never get the British papers filled with gushing, uncritical praise of a complex and divisive political figure, so it's good.
He has the rocket, but none of the capability, apparently. He's
so many men have said that.
But Cameron's loving it, though, isn't he? Cameron's loving the whole career thing, because Trident is in the news now.
Cameron tried to tie it in. We'll go, see, he's a lunatic. That's the reason why we've got our lunatic thing. Didn't he? He said it in the same day as Kim Jong-un is giving it the whole, come and have a go if you've got bread and water.
He's like, you know, I saw it once on a bus when a crazy person got on and they're really crazy and then someone out-crazied them and they sort of became normal because they saw crazy.
That was genuinely Richard Nixon's strategy in Vietnam.
What?
The Vietnamese would think he was so mad he would do anything.
Just they'll think we're completely bonkers.
They won't know what I'm going to do next, so we better give in. It didn't work.
I was once on a train with Clive James and we were fooling along through a little country station and a man got on fully kitted out in camouflage kit. Everything was camouflaged and he'd got some sort of green paint on. And I looked at him and Clive looked at him and Clive went, I hope you're not going to sit here and be weird. And he left. That's what we should do with Kim Jong-un. Just sit here and be weird.
You see, there's the thing. Just because you're crazy doesn't mean you can't have manners.
Yeah. Tensions are running high on the Korean Peninsula as North Korean leader Kim Jong-un claims nuclear war is imminent. If you missed this, it was in the papers. You just had to flip past the first 30 pages. There it was, page 31, World War III. Pyongyang has advised foreign visitors in the south to evacuate immediately, which sounds about right. 2 points to Jeremy. Daniel, who brought old divisions to the front pages?
Well, obviously, Margaret Thatcher's death this week has produced every newspaper trying to get its own angle. Although my favourite was the Bexley Times, who headed their story, Former Dartford Candidate Dies. So I don't think Margaret Thatcher wasn't a stranger to the division. Somebody who worked for her told me that they tried to get her a joke for a speech and they decided on Monty Python's dead parrot sketch. But she'd never heard of it. She didn't think it was funny. So they brought in a television screen and they showed her and she still didn't think it was funny. And so eventually I had to say to her, honestly, I promise you it is funny. You have to use it in a speech. So she allowed to go in the speech. And about a minute before she was going on, she turned round to my friend and said, John, this Monty Python, is he one of us? So he just said, yes, Prime Minister, and she went on and delivered it, yes.
Did she get a laugh?
Yes, it worked.
She'd made a mess of that Derek and Clive stuff, though, didn't she? I didn't celebrate. People thought I would celebrate, and I just thought, well, no, because I take the John Donne line that each man's death diminishes me, for I am involved with mankind. Of course, he wasn't talking about women, but you've got to bear in mind it was written in the 70s. And, and of course, the thing is, before Margaret Thatcher came along, let's remember this, that there were no women in the country before Thatcher. It was all... You see, the young people won't remember this. It was all in black and white, and it was all just men in flat caps speaking indecipherably in northern accents to whippets, and no one did any work, and everything was miserable. Unlike today, where we have a thriving economy where we all just sell coffee to each other. Everything is great. But I was prepared to leave it all alone and not talk about it, and then it's become this horrible triumphalist Orange March with Shirley Bassey. I mean...
Sorry, who are you talking about?
The Iron Lady.
Never heard of her. See, news of your English Prime Ministers doesn't get to my island.
It does, because I saw a headline, Iron Lady Rust in Peace, on a wall in Belfast.
It's nice to know, in between the killing, there's wordplay. Well then, I gotta say, you're gonna take me in ACOPS, but you're a very witty man. I thought we were talking about a very divisive figure, and I decided to put her in context. Yes. Right. In the other day, she was only a problem for 17 years, whereas my stuff in Ireland, 500. Beat that, north and south of England. Will you be still singing about it in 300 years? No. You'll be in your flying cars. Not in Ireland. We'll still be marching around things and remembering stuff.
Actually, there were quite a lot of people who didn't seem to know what was happening. Was there not some confusion online? Somebody thought that Cher has died. which I would have been devastated about.
You know, yesterday was a whole yak fest in both of the Houses of Parliament. And there were some people made long, positive speeches about her, like Malcolm Rifkind. And then Glenda Jackson said lots of scathing things about her. But in the middle, the one that I loved was Selwyn Gummer. John Selwyn Gummer. Does anybody remember him?
I do.
He was the one that fed the burger to his child. God, they just don't make politicians like they used to. He stood up and he went, "She had very beautiful hands and lovely ankles. And she knew how to use them." That was it.
I liked it when they said the House of Commons had been recalled. It sounded like it was faulty and they were going to...
And send back to Japan. Yeah. His airbag doesn't work. Well, that funeral is how much?
We don't know, but is it about 8 million?
About 8 million.
Now, you see, I happen to know, because we go to Aldershot Crematorium in my family. Aldershot Crem is 735 quid for the whole schmear. That's with the organist. So then you've got flowers, sandwiches. You need a lot of sandwiches, because all the old people in the neighbourhood turn up, because it's like Night of the Living Dead if there's a funeral. Suddenly all the old people, "Oh, I'm sure your mum, she sounds like a lovely lady. Who was she? Oh, look, sausage roll." So you can do the whole lot for less than 2.5.
One of the things people are asking is if it'll be the same when Blair dies, and I think they're just being ridiculous. I mean, everybody knows he's not going to die.
He will, but days later he will rise again.
That's true.
In this funeral business, the one I feel sorry for is Gordon Brown.
Why?
You know, you can just tell he's just at home. He's going, "Oh, they're not going to give me a state funeral. They're going to send my body to Arbroath and smoke me."
Margaret Thatcher died this week at the age of 87. Many people paid their respects, from political heavyweights like Norman Lamont and Baroness Williams to more lightweight voices such as Harry Styles from One Direction and Ed Miliband. A special session of Parliament was held with tributes to the former Prime Minister lasting for 6 hours. In contrast, the tributes on Churchill's death lasted 45 minutes. Do you know, to be honest, I didn't even know that little insurance dog had died. 2 points to Daniel. Roisin, who would benefit from coherent opposition?
Oh, yes. This is Labour have outlined new plans for the welfare state. Am I right? Am I on the right story?
Yeah.
and they want it to be more sort of input-based. So if you paid more into the NI, then you're able to get more back if you're unemployed. And if you have never worked, you get sort of very little benefits. So basically introducing the class system to the welfare state, effectively. It's a terrible plan.
Harriet Harman said she'd spoken to working people and they felt resentful. Although I have to say, she's surely her own fault for bothering them in the first place. But
The idea, isn't it, to bring an end to the something for nothing culture, and I think it's ironic, because if it succeeds and Ed Miliband becomes Prime Minister, that is the epitome of something for nothing.
I have to say, I'm fed up with my taxes being wasted on benefits when we could buy some perfectly good aircraft carriers. I don't know why... Liam Byrne, he was new to me. If you're not familiar with Liam Byrne, he was the man who led Labour's response. He's like William Hague without the sexual magnetism. He's really sweet looking. He looks like a house elf that's known a lot of sadness.
How do you know what that elf looks like?
Darling, I'm from Scandinavia. Our houses are full of elves.
He sounds like he has more hair than he does.
Yes.
He has a confident voice of a man who has hair.
Right.
Just like William Hague.
Yes. You see what I mean? It's William
Hague. Both of them have hair voices.
You think you're listening to John Bon Jovi?
Major changes to disability benefits came into force this week, part of wide-ranging reforms to the welfare system. MPs on both sides say Labour are struggling to form a coherent response. Miliband's big speech on disability benefit was upstaged by the death of Margaret Thatcher and by the tensions in North Korea and by a picture of a police dog wearing shoes. At the end of round one. The scores are Jeremy and Daniel have got 4 points, but so too have Roisin and Andrew. We start round two with a cutting from the Hampshire Chronicle.
Engineers were called to City Road last Friday following reports of a smell of gas from a member of the public.
And our thanks to Robin Tuff for sending us that. Jeremy, who's bored of all the men?
Vince Cable says there should be more women in the boardroom. Because boardrooms are really untidy and no-one's watering the plants.
Here! You love it! You love it!
I think you make a very valid point.
But yeah, they need more women with boardroom eyes. Well, probably things would be better if women run everything, because men are all competitive and arsey and like being in charge. Basically, men are going, look at me, look at me, look at I'm running this, look at me, look at me, look at me. Oh, look at me. Whereas women want to just all go to the toilet at the same time. But yeah, the FTSE are not making as much progress as they should be in becoming less male.
Well, to be fair, the government has set a whopping target of 25%. I mean,
yes.
One in four. Where are they going to find all those women? It's not like there's millions of...
They want to be more representative. Because let's be honest, one in four people are women.
In 2011, the chairman of Glencore, this is one of 67 companies in the FTSE which still has all-male boards, he expressed scepticism at the quota, said, women like bringing up their children and all sorts of things. Yes, Jeremy's always bringing up his impetigo, but I just ignore him. Have you experienced the glass ceiling machine?
Yes, and lots of different ceilings. Yeah. I'm quite tall. Yeah, I think you know, it's just trying to reflect what society is. It's not just in the boardroom, it should be all areas of public life. It's not very funny. I'm very firm on this.
The phrase that I learnt during the week is the sticky floor.
I beg your pardon?
The sticky floor.
I think that's very much a boy's thing. I don't think...
Yeah, the sticky floor is where your women are trapped on minimum wage. It's the other end of the same social curse. You've the glass ceiling where women can't get through. Hello, I want in.
Yeah, and the sticky floor is...
And we're up there going, oh, not by the hair of our chinny chin chins. No chance. Business women tend to be quite grumpy. So, no, you're not coming in here. They do.
Business women aren't grumpy.
Oh, God, they are. They're very driven and they're all called Lynn. True. true. Men and women unite on this.
You can't say God, it's true. Say they're all so... called Lynn and they're busy. They've had to be to get to... They've got off the sticky floor through a glass ceiling. They're not going to arrive all like, life's just a peach. They're going to be angry. Like, my name's Lynn. My feet are stuck to the ground. My head's bleeding.
Yes. But on the other hand, it's not easy, that invisible glass ceiling for us men. I mean, you women, you've got that excuse. Well, I couldn't get there. Sexism got in the way. Whereas I've got to wake up every day going, why am I the chairman of Glencore? What have I done? I could have been the emperor of the world. But here I am, eating biscuits, watching Home and Away again. The floor's not even sticky.
Vince Cable has told British companies to do more to get women onto their executive boards and threaten them with the introduction of mandatory quotas. Cable said this is not just about gender equality, but about improving the performance and productivity of companies and making it easier to cast their end-of-term plays. A spokesman for Glencore, one of the six companies in the FTSE 100 with all-male boards, read a statement saying, "Ooh, girls." 2 points to Jeremy. Andrew, who's offered to say goodnight to their title?
One of the H-boss bankers.
Yes.
Has been rightfully shamed. I feel genuinely ashamed for my incompetence at the head of a bank. I'm handing this gong back, but I'm keeping all the money. Is that it?
Do you want to go crazy and name him, or is that just going too far?
I think his name is Alan.
No, it's...
Talk about H-Boss Alan. We all know him.
I listened. There was three of them. I remember this. I was in the car. I was coming back from Sainsbury's. They were from H-Boss. One of them's hand back its thingy-me-jig.
Yep.
They're talking about possibly banning them from ever...
Having a thingy-me-jig.
Having a thingy-me-jig, yeah. Being a big poo-bah in the city.
Yeah.
Because they all went off. They went from ruining that bank. Here, we've left a big steaming pile of bank. We're off to work elsewhere at other things.
Do you know what? When I listen to you, Andrew, I think that Stephanie Flanders is overpaid.
One of them's gone to work, and his CV is absolutely ideal for this, for Corals, the bookmaker.
That's
right. So basically, having ruined the bank because they had too many risks, he's been put in charge of being a bookie.
Really?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, this chap, Sir James Crosby.
That's the one.
Crosses.
Yes.
He's giving back a third of his pension, but he's still going to have £406,000 a year. But he's going to be shopping at Aldi. So what's the protocol for this, Daniel? Do you know? You give your knighthood back, does the Queen have a ceremony in reverse?
Yes, he just writes to the Honours Forfeiture Committee and they decide.
But there isn't a thing where the Queen has a sort of ceremony and then he stands outside with an empty box. And has
She should do the sword thing again, but blindfold.
The actual medal, like, so the next person who gets knighted, they don't just get like Duff's old Crosser's one down.
Well, she takes it back if he's still got the receipt, I think. Is the, I don't know who else is this. Fred the Shred, he lost Nicholas Ceausescu, he lost his
Lester Piggott
got it back, and Robert Mugabe. Oh, it's like the guest list of my fantasy dinner party. Actually, I have been calling for months for this man to lose his pension, mainly because every time I go to the post office, it's in front of me in the queue taking out £500,000 in tens.
The report said that even if there hadn't been the financial crash all over the Western world, this bank would have gone to pot.
Yeah.
Which those dudes in H-Boss must have been like, yes! When the whole world went to crap, they must have been like, yeah! We've won the tallest dwarf contest!
Sir James Crosby, the disgraced former chief executive of H-Boss, has offered to return his knighthood and cut his pension. Sir James said that foregoing a third of his pension was a huge weight off his shoulders as he'd been carrying it round in a backpack. At the end of round two, the scores are Jeremy and Daniel have got 8 points, but in the lead are Roisin and Andrew with 9. Before we start round three, here's an advert spotted in the Haverhill Weekly News.
Serene Foot Care, providing treatment for corns and verrucas, ingrown toenails, cracked skin and diabetic foot care. The perfect Valentine's gift.
Thanks to Cheryl Green for sending us that. Jeremy, why might smiling less give you the needle?
Well, this is weird because you might think that first of all you feel an emotion and then your face reacts accordingly, but apparently that's wrong. It's the other way around. You feel happier when you smile and you feel sadder when you frown. The audience here will notice that my frown looks like I've been hit by an axe because I've had a stressful and worrying life. And so my forehead looks like Keith Richards' scrotum.
How do you know that?
Just maths. Basically, what happens is, if you have Botox, whereby your face is paralysed, then you experience less emotion. But basically, what they're saying is that the actual movement of the face stimulates the brain. And this is something that Clive Owen should listen to, because I've seen many films with Clive Owen in them. And I'm thinking, if that face could move, the different emotions you could communicate within that character that you're playing... You know, if you could just take off that strangely wooden mask and do some expressions, Clive. Clive, do some expressions. You've been to drama school. Come on.
George Melly met Mick Jagger and he said to him, "You're incredibly wrinkled." And Mick Jagger replied, "Oh, they're laughter lines," to which George Melly said, "Nothing's that funny."
People hold Botox parties, you know, now. And you all get injected at the same time. Actually, I went to a Botox surprise party, which is why I look so shocked all the time.
You could have a tetanus jab at a buttocks party.
But there are so many simple things you could do. OK, I go to sleep with two slices of cucumber on my eyes, and that way I always know where they are when I want my 4 a.m. cocktail. So... A study at Cardiff University's School of Psychology has found that people who have Botox injections around their eyes are more likely to experience unhappiness and depression because they are less able to smile. Not only does happiness cause smiling, but smiling causes happiness, which is both the conclusion of the study and the government's replacement system for the disability living allowance. Dr. Michael Lewis of Cardiff University was not surprised by the findings, or at least he didn't look surprised. 2 points to Jeremy. Roisin, pourquoi le Louvre a été fermé?
Absolutely.
Do you want to do the whole thing in French? Because I don't mind. It's fine if you want to.
Chabrita Londres. this was about the museum in Paris, and I'm not very good at pronouncing it. I've been there. The museum where the Mona Lisa lives
the
is
Louvre.
Called Louvre.
The Louvre.
At the Louvre. Basically, they've had so many pickpockets coming in and they've got increasingly more violent. They've just shut it down. They've just closed it, which is the most French, wonderful way to deal with things. Just the idea they've got, right, everyone out, close it, lock it up.
They've basically gone on strike.
Yeah.
What against?
Pickpockets.
But security at the Louvre is very lax. I think they've been relying for years on the Mona Lisa's eyes following you around the room. So.
They should just ban pockets. Maybe they give them, like, a cagoule.
Right.
That they tie at the ends, either end, to like a sausage.
OK, have you ever been to the Niagara Falls? Because they give you what is effectively an entire condom to wear.
That's it. Or just get some security, maybe, perhaps.
Oh. Yeah, but women don't have pockets. You don't use pockets. You put things in bags, don't you? If you put your things in your front pocket, it's much more obvious when somebody is rummaging in... I mean, also... you get to an age where you're quite pleased to find somebody rummaging in the front of your trousers.
The only reason you go to museums.
Exactly. Leaving fibres hanging out the front of
take
your
take all you want, my dear, take all you want. it's because of bags you get robbed, because women don't have pockets. They just have a bag inside bag inside bag. It's just like you get stuck behind women at the cash pot and it's like, oh, well, you could have got it out before you get to the end, but you get... And you open your bag and you go into your compartment and you go into... And in the compartment is your purse and you open the... And it's full of receipts and vouchers for sort of hair salons and the National Trust. And you get your card out and you put it in and then you have to take... And you have to get out the piece of paper, the number, and then you put it all back in its compartment, back in its purse, and then the purse goes back in its purse compartment, sit down, close your bag, put your bag on your shoulder, go back to the car, drive off with the bag on the roof of the car.
And do you know why the bag is so full, Jeremy? It's full of all the shit men don't want to put in their pockets. Can I give you a quick art joke, OK? A friend of mine has just had some scenes of domestic Dutch life in the 17th century etched onto her front teeth. She's had her Vermeers done.
I was listening to the news quiz on Friday. That really was a very good joke about Flemish artists. It really was. It was a little bit near the knuckle. We were quite shocked, actually, that they were really pushing the envelope, actually, because, you know, some big fans of Flemish Renaissance art could be quite offended by that. But, you know, I guess it's satire. One has to get used to it in this modern age of beatniks and drainpipe trousers, doesn't one, really?
The Louvre was closed all day this Wednesday after staff walked out of the world-famous art museum over a failure to tackle pickpockets. It's the biggest scandal to hit France since national supplies of horse lasagna were contaminated with beef. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings. The teams have brought along Mr. Hardy.
This was sent in by Becky Poles, and it's from the Hearts and Essex Observer. Andrew Burton, Managing Director of Burton Retail and Catering Butchers, says, I personally pick out all the meat we sell myself and our supply chain is very small, about three or four people. Whereas some supermarkets, the meat goes through about 15 people before it ends up in a lasagna.
Mr. Finkstein.
Well, it's from the Warwickshire Life magazine, and it's Valentine's Recipes, a classic breakfast recipe with a twist that's perfect for a cosy breakfast in bed, serves four.
Ms. Carnatine.
This is sent in from Joe Silber. In a BBC News article on the discovery of a previously unknown work by Beethoven, Beethoven scholars had not identified the piece earlier because it just looked like a series of notes.
Mr. Maxwell.
Now, this was an email sent in by Wendy Wilson. It's apparently on the website listverse.com regarding Oscar Wilde's tomb in Paris. Wilde's tomb, with an angel displaying its genitalia, was defaced soon after its erection.
Let's look at the final scores. Jeremy and Daniel have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Roisin and Andrew with 13. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the Fenland Citizen sent in by Sue Ashdown.
There have been complaints that alleyways and shop doorways around Wisbeach are being used as public conveniences. One shopkeeper claims the problem is so bad he's unable to use his rear entrance.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Daniel Finkelstein, Roisin Connaty and Andrew Maxwell. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig and the news was read by me, Carolyn Brown. The chair's script was written by John Luke Roberts, Roderick Crooks and James Kettle, with additional material by James Bug, Ronnie Maguire and Nadia Kamal. The producer was Sam Bryant.